I Hate Politics is a podcast about a human activity we love to hate. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. Montgomery County, Maryland has a drone as first responder program. What that means, in effect, is rather than use a drone as an instrument in the hands of a police officer, the county's program is trying to use the drone to respond to 911 calls for service before a police officer can respond to them. Send the drone ahead of the police officer and sometimes obviate the need to send an officer or enable officers to concentrate quickly. Because they fly through the air, response time to the incident location is faster than almost anything else. But with all new technology comes questions about checks and balances. One of the big issues now is how privacy is going to be defined. In the past, being out in public was tantamount to not having expectations of privacy. But the courts have increasingly protected some types of data gathering by government without a warrant, such as cell phone location, which even though it is publicly available, is now considered to be private. Meanwhile, about 10 years ago, the federal courts shut down Baltimore's aerial surveillance program, which used an aircraft, not drones. Jay Stanley is senior policy analyst for the American Civil Liberties Union, follows emerging technologies, and has written a paper about the dangers of unchecked drone use. I asked him about programs that use drones as first responders, and especially the one in Montgomery County.
I Hate Politics is brought to you by UMBC's Political Science Program, where you'll learn to shape public policy, impact communities, and function at the center of modern society. Learn more at shadygrove.umbc.edu.
I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means our politics are messy, dirty, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we may hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society moving precisely when we don't agree with each other, like now. Music for this episode comes from the Interstate but DMV heavy band, Finster. Kate Johnson on vocals and guitar, Doogie Whitaker on guitars, Sky Darwin on bass, and Matt Zelenz on the drums. The songs are from their 1997 album, I Wish I Had a Camera. These lackluster days seem to shine brightly, and I want to go back. Jay Stanley, welcome to I Hate Politics.
Thanks for having me on.
Drones have long been used in public safety and policing. Montgomery County, Maryland has a program that they started about a year ago. And they seem to be qualitatively different from other programs. What stands out to you?
Well, I consider them a relatively new technology because a lot of the implications of police use of drones are still unclear and are still working their way out. But it's true they've probably been used for about 10 plus years routinely by, you know, starting in like 2013, 2014. Typically, they're used for, crime scene and accident photography, to try and find a missing person, for, you know, very local tactical reasons. And also one of the most common uses, which is we find troubling, is to monitor gatherings, whether it's protests, pumpkin festivals. And that's one of the most common sort of uses that we see of law enforcement drones. But the newest thing is these drones as first responder programs, where you dial 911, the police send a drone over your house or where the whatever other location the call comes in from. And you know, this really involves flying drones across and around a city or town. Some of the programs around the country also involve getting special permission from the FAA to fly beyond the visual line of sight of the operator, called BVLOS, beyond visual line of sight. Normally, you're not allowed to fly a drone beyond the visual line of sight of you, the operator, but you can get a special exemption from that rule from the FAA. This is fairly new, just 2 or 3, 4 years old, and there's still only like 20 or so places in this U.S. that have these programs. Montgomery County isn't the first, but it's probably in the first batch of programs. My understanding is that Montgomery County does not have a BVLOS exemption in Wheaton, but it's seeking one for Gaithersburg, which is more spread out. I've written a piece that outlines what we think the policies and protections should be around these programs. The FAA is currently working on a rulemaking to allow by right BVLOS, so it'll open up the right to do BVLOS flights to anybody, but that will open up the skies to Amazon deliveries, UPS deliveries, you know, local deliveries, burrito copters or what have you, and to any police department that wants to use drones for first responders or other uses, in particular drone patrols, which we vehemently oppose. So far, I've only heard of one town in the United States that is using drones for patrol as opposed to going to a call for service.
That's
Beverly Hills.
Guess it's expensive to hire cops there.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you see sort of a U-shape when it comes to the deployment of surveillance technologies, where you see them deployed in the poorest neighborhoods, and then you see them deployed in the richest neighborhoods.
The first responder approach is an effort, both I've heard, to provide faster service and to reduce cost, in a sense that they can triage 911 calls. Is that the logic of it?
Those have definitely been, among the top rationales, and a lot of police departments are having trouble recruiting. Police departments will say, yeah, this is a force multiplier. You know, we can do more with fewer police. Of course, my response is always like, okay, fine, but exactly how much multiplication of our police do we want? We could have the technological equivalent of 5 police officers on every block, cameras in the sky, cameras on the ground, license plate readers. These technologies give new powers to the police, and how much of those powers do we want them to have exactly?
There is this question of how much policing is necessary. I'd imagine that question has to be answered not in principle, but in practice. Residents may actually be willing to accept a higher level of policing, and then, you know, it'll be removed after crime is brought under some level of control.
These decisions about exactly how much power and what kinds of power we want to allow the law enforcement departments that serve our communities and the purposes to make our communities better, how much do we want them to have? And so that's only possible if law enforcement is transparent about what they're doing, and that they're transparent about the details about how it's working out. And Montgomery County has been among the better police agencies in terms of being transparent about their DFR program. Like a couple others, they have maps showing the routes of each drone flight and where they're flying.
But that's after the fact, right?
That's after the fact, yeah. We want permission ahead of time, but you also want to monitor it once it's happening, as it is now in Montgomery County. Is it actually worth the money? Is it worth the potential risks and downsides to privacy? And you can't make those decisions as a democracy unless you have the information. And sometimes what we see is law enforcement agencies, like other bureaucracies, hold information close to their vest. They release the information that makes them look good and serves their goals, and they hide the information that makes them look bad and doesn't serve their goals. And so, with body cameras and other, cameras, sometimes we see the risk that police departments release video when they see fit as propaganda. They release video that makes their technology look like it saves the day, and that makes their police officers look heroic. And you know, video of potentially abusive behavior by police officers or what have you gets buried and they refuse to release it.
Are you seeing that, though, with the Drone as First Responder program?
We're in very early days here, so I don't have any particular anecdotes for you on that, and I have not heard of them. But experience and logic makes it very clear that, you know, as these programs expand, you're going to have times where a police drone records a situation where somebody gets shot or the like, and there is allegations that it was a bad shooting, as the police call it, that it was unjustified, that it was abusive. And then the question is, what's going to happen to the video that the drone captured? And we thought about this carefully with regards to body cameras.
When this kind of innovation happens, we generally analogize the legal framework. So is it your expectation that the body camera legal framework is what will be extended to the drone as first responders? Or are they creating new legal frameworks to be able to deal with this kind of novel issue?
There should be consistent policies for handling video created by police cameras across circumstances, whether that video is on your lapel or it's in your drone overhead or it's on your dash camera and in your police vehicle. The same principles should apply.
Let's investigate the cost issue a little bit. Do you have a sense of how much these drone as first responder programs cost?
Drones cost a couple tens of thousands of dollars, especially if they're American-made drones, which are much more expensive. And one of the sort of humorous things in the drone area has been seeing law enforcement officials across the country objecting violently to suggestions that they not be permitted to buy Chinese-made drones. They all say the Chinese drones are both cheaper and better, and you're not going to let me buy them.
In Montgomery County, I believe the drone itself cost $35,000. But that cost is a small part of the total cost. They have hired contractors to fly the drone, and those contractors cost about $200,000 a year. Has the Fraternal Order of Police or the police unions, have they complained about their bargained positions are being given away? Or
no, there is a Association of Law Enforcement Pilots. If there was any group that would care, I would think it would be that group, but I don't know.
Okay, so let's talk about the core concerns you have around privacy.
Number one is mass surveillance, which I've been talking about, and our concern that this will become, you know, a stepping stone to mass aerial surveillance. Number two is the importance of democratic process here and of having, you know, communities have democratic control over exactly what type of policing they're subject to. Number three is the importance of chilling effects. Having law enforcement do excessive monitoring and unjustified monitoring, it makes them watch themselves with what sociologists have called the third eye. Not only are you looking out at the world with your own two eyes, but there's an imaginary eye that you're imagining watching you, and you're wondering how that eye is going to interpret what you're doing. Oh, is this going to be misinterpreted as something that's going to draw attention to me by the police or whatever? And that's just no way to live. And it's especially true in a country where our judiciary, our legal system, has refused to create a reliable system in which law enforcement officers who are abusive, who use force unnecessarily, are held to account, which means that if you, especially if you're somebody who's a person of color, a low-income person, other vulnerable person, if you're in the presence of a police officer, you're in the presence of somebody who can do a lot of harm to you with no repercussions for them, for the most part. There are exceptions, especially when they attract a lot of media attention and so forth. But by and large, it's very, very difficult to win a lawsuit or other legal process against a police officer. And the police officers know that. And so that's part of the context of chilling effects and why the other issue is privacy in public. People sometimes glibly say, oh, you're in public. You have no expectation of privacy anyway. And that's always been true. You don't have expectation from the people that you can see. They can see you, you can see them, and obviously, you know, you're exposed in public in that way. It used to be simple like that, but now, number one, you can be watched all the time, and you can also be watched by watchers that you don't see, like a drone at 400 feet. And the courts have increasingly recognized that you do have certain elements of privacy when you're in public. You have privacy in your movements and activities across space and time, which nobody who sees you in public can normally see unless they follow you around, in which case you probably freak out and ask for a restraining order, or unless there's a team of like 10 law enforcement officers who are following you around the clock. That's very expensive, and that imposes a natural limit. So police only do that when they really need it. They don't do it on entire populations, which is now possible with the technology that we have. And so, you know, the courts have found in a number of decisions that the Fourth Amendment does protect us against that kind of surveillance across space and time. The fifth issue I talk about is usage limits, how we need to, you know, set boundaries about if a community decides that it wants to allow its law enforcement to fly drones, there should be some limits on, you know, when and why those are used. Recording limits, you know, just because the police have a camera in the air doesn't necessarily automatically mean that it shouldn't be recording. And so that's a good thing to put into policy. And then transparency is very important. Again, people should know what their law enforcement agencies are doing, and they should also, but also so they can evaluate it democratically. And there should be transparency around, as I said, the routes and purposes for drone flights, which Montgomery County is commendably doing. The capabilities and payloads, they offer some information about that on the site, but they don't tell you about, for example, how powerful the zoom lenses are, what kind of night vision equipment they have on there. I'd like to see more information about that. They should be transparent about their policies and the performance over time. You know, that should be evaluated by a neutral party that's not necessarily the police department itself, which wants to keep this program. But and then, of course, as we talked about, you know, there need to be very careful rules around when and when not is video transparent, made public. And then one of the big questions around drones as we sort of start to integrate them into our society is to what extent they can be used for news gathering, for reporting, and not just by professional reporters, but potentially by individuals. A lot of police violence is photographed by bystanders. To what extent in the future world are people going to be able to fly their own drones?
We have an episode on that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So we have an episode with a drone reporter in Montgomery County. And he doesn't consider himself a reporter, but that's how he works.
Reporting is not something that is only done by professional reporters. Reporting is not a category of person. It's an activity. It's a human activity that anybody can engage in. And in fact, there was somebody, a private drone operator, who flew a drone in Texas and videotaped a river of pig's blood flowing from a slaughterhouse into a river. And that reporting, which is what it was, by that individual led to criminal charges, environmental charges against the operators of that slaughterhouse. People want to report on how the police are behaving. There have been many protests where the police have behaved very badly, and we've seen like the equivalent of police riots. And will law enforcement shut out all reporting of those kinds of situations? And there was a story that happened in Ferguson, Missouri, where sure you recall there was unrest around shooting of Michael Brown, and it emerged that the Ferguson police asked the FAA for a TFR, temporary flight restriction, to basically ban aircraft around the town where the protests were taking place.
Did they get it?
They got it. But then they started writing emails, which were later obtained by the Associated Press, saying, actually, can you let this aircraft in? Can you let that aircraft in? And basically admitted explicitly, they just wanted to keep media helicopters out.
There is the Ferguson police. And Montgomery County police makes the point that it is not the Ferguson police. Right? And so there's like a good police force and a not so good police force. If you go to Montgomery County Police Department and go, we are going to apply the same kinds of motivations and considerations that apply maybe in Ferguson. And they'll say, no, we don't do that. Look at our record. And, you know, their record is better. So what do you do? How do you crack that nut?
I do think that it's always wise to put checks and balances in place on government power. Some of the problems may have to do with specifically troubled police departments, but again, I keep saying this, police departments are bureaucracies, and bureaucracies have certain tendencies. You need checks and balances.
They did close down the program in the Baltimore Police Department.
I don't know about their drone program, but they definitely had a crewed aircraft mass surveillance program. This was run by a company called Persistent Surveillance Systems, PSS. And they basically put a crewed Cessna up in the sky over the city. They had a gigapixel camera on that. They used computers to sort of stabilize the image and basically flew circles over the city for, you know, all day, every day, daylight hours. And the camera, superpower camera, allowed them to photograph basically like a 32 square mile area and every vehicle and pedestrian in that area and where they were going and when. They introduced it without even telling, let alone the asking permission of like the mayor or the city council. And then there was an uproar when it was discovered by Bloomberg. And then they shut it down, and then they tried to restart it. This time they went through, you know, better channels and so forth. And we at the ACLU filed a lawsuit on behalf of a number of community organizations who didn't want to feel monitored. And it went up to the federal appeals court, and we won. They ruled that on Fourth Amendment grounds, you couldn't engage in that sort of mass surveillance.
So what is qualitatively different between that Cessna and the drones that Montgomery County is flying?
The difference is, well, first of all, commendably, Montgomery County does not have its cameras facing down, I think doesn't record on the way to calls, which is good. They are not watching the entirety of the county. They're not watching 32 square miles. For no reason. They are flying to specific events. It's a far narrower and more targeted use of aerial surveillance. My concern lies more just in sort of an accumulation of these particular uses becoming so dense over time that it becomes tantamount to basically police cameras in the sky being everywhere all the time. And number two, you're going to start to see more and more departments wanting to do what Beverly Hills is doing, which is, you know, why should we have to launch it every time there's a call? Let's just leave the drones flying in the air and on patrol. We know there's going to be some crimes probably in the next couple of weeks in this neighborhood. Let's put drones up, you know, full time. The Baltimore sort of massive eye in the sky watching the whole city is sort of the extreme end of the spectrum. And we were very glad that the federal appeals court struck it down.
None of the drone programs have gone to court yet, and there's not been any pushback in that way against them. ACLU filed a suit against the Baltimore program, but you haven't done that for any of the Droners First Responder program that have come about since.
The concern is sort of where it goes in the future. And it's not speculative or paranoia to think that it will turn into something broader and more routine that could have negative effects and just not, you know, might be not worth the cost benefit over time.
Well, the other issue that I was thinking about as you were listing out your concerns is the transparency problem I am most concerned about is not that they will hide, but that they will inundate the channels with information such that you really can't even in any effective way monitor it from outside.
There are people who do. For example, Chula Vista, which was the very first DFR program, also like Montgomery County, posts the details about their flights and the purposes or what have you. And some reporters went through it in great depth and spent like a couple of months doing analyses of where the flights are, you know, in comparison to different demographic, characteristics of different parts of Chula Vista, and did an analysis. And so, transparency is sometimes it's about letting experts or reporters or particular individuals do deep dives, and it's the data. You know, the data is there if somebody wants to do something with it.
The reporters that looked into Chula Vista program in San Diego, what did they find?
They found that a lot of the flights were for very minor purposes, and that even, you know, a flight for a minor purpose might go over in a densely populated parts of Chula Vista might go over like thousands of people. And they also found that the drones were, you know, basically by concatenating all the reported drone flights that Chula Vista published, they found that the drones were mostly over poor people. And spent far less time over more affluent people in different parts of the city. And that's in line with, you know, the general tendency that surveillance is most often imposed on poor neighborhoods of color.
But also Beverly Hills. Do you know if they record on patrol? If they record on patrol, they'll be similar to the Baltimore program.
Well, the drones are at much lower altitudes, and so each individual camera can only see so much of, you know, of the area. But yeah, it's getting into that same territory, which is why we will always be vehemently against any kind of, you know, suspicionless drone patrols. These programs are very new. There's you know, probably only a couple handfuls of departments across the country that are doing DFR programs. When I did my white paper on this like a year or two ago, we only knew about a dozen or so that we could find.
Do you find any geographic concentration of them?
There are a number in California, but no, there's also some in Georgia and elsewhere scattered around the country. I think a lot of it has to do with whether there may be one person in a police department who you know, sort of makes it a mission to try and make this happen.
Have you talked to the people that run the Montgomery County program?
I have, yeah.
Are you satisfied with how they see the problems, the concerns that you have raised, whether it's privacy or it's transparency, recording limits? Are you at this moment satisfied with where they are?
I found them to be thoughtful and acting in good faith. They agreed with some, if not all, of what, you know, our recommendations have been around these programs. I'd like to see really a definition of exactly when they will launch these flights, maybe some limits on that.
What limits would you like to see?
I think some sort of limit around just how serious something is before you launch a drone.
But if they are trying to triage, then you want to send the drone as often as you can. The drone goes instead of sending a police officer, and then drone says, you know what, father and son wrestling.
There's definitely trade-offs there. Our main concern, again, is that this not just becomes so common that it creates chilling effects. We would like to see statutes rather than as mere internal police department policies.
It does seem that they have fairly broad support in the county council.
The county council approved the program, then I imagine that they must. And it's good that they didn't go forward without getting approval, as some places have done with surveillance technologies. I'd like to see more transparency about exactly sort of what the capabilities of the cameras are, as I mentioned.
What is your concern about the high-powered camera?
It should be known to the public exactly what the powers and limitations are of the equipment that's on the drone. I mean, a drone is a platform. You can put anything on it. You could put radio receivers. You could put chemical detectors, like any sensor that's been invented, you can put on a drone. The only, you know, limitation is size and weight. And so just as a general matter across the country, we would like to see it become standard practice to have full disclosure of exactly what sensors are on a drone.
But if they're not recording, if the camera is turned off, as in Montgomery County, until the point that they get to the location, then does that matter?
If you look at the list on their site, you know, they get a call, they fly there, and there's the person that was, you know, accused of shoplifting or that somebody found suspicious is just like not there. So they're recording people who are going about their business with no visible, you know, police crisis at hand or law enforcement, you know, public order problem. And they're being, you know, at that point, they're recording, right? I would like to see in their policy exactly how they're handling the data that they do collect, the recordings, when they will be made public and when they won't. And they sort of make broad reference to state, presumably state FOIA laws. That needs to be nailed down better. Questions around data sharing and retention, exactly when and when not would various forms of video be shared with other parties. What's the private companies, the contractors that are involved here, like what are they getting access to? they're not the police, and they have their private company. They have a different set of incentives. But yeah, I mean, I found that the people with the agency to be very thoughtful, and they've done a lot of things right in Montgomery County.
G. Stanley, thank you for taking the time. This is a brave new world. Good luck as you navigate it.
Thank you. It's hard to keep up with everything happening so fast, and there being so many things to worry about when you're paid to be paranoid, as I am.
Well, I'm glad somebody is paid to be paranoid.
Trying to keep my beat, but they're stomping all around from the unified bounds. Running with the times, gotta keep in the laws. Heaven on the noise, if I go off the road, I've got a mean streak, I can tell. I got one foot in heaven and the other in hell. You can sit and chime those bells, but as for me, I'm out of here.
That's all for this episode of I Hate Politics, where we aim to stem the decline in local news by working with community voices. Don't forget to tune in to our Tuesday morning news analysis. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, and assistant producer, Adama Gay, with support from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from the interstate but DMV heavy band Finster. Kate Johnson on vocals and guitar, Doogie Whitaker on guitars, Sky Darwin on bass, and Matt Zelenz on the drums. The songs come from their 1997 album, I Wish I Had a Camera. If you want to share your music on the show or know someone else who might want to, please email us at producer@ihbpod.org. I hope you'll subscribe and share the podcast as we bring you stories about politics close to you and to your home. See you next time. Hell, you can sit and